You are listening to the Primitive Intelligence Podcast, episode 519, How Santa Claus Stole Christmas. Not the Grinch, Santa Claus. If you're listening to this or you clicked on it on YouTube and you're thinking this is a good one to watch or listen to with your kid, don't. That is your warning. That is the disclaimer. If you listen to this further and your kids wind up sad because of what I say in this episode, it is your fault. You've been warned. Now, moving on, I've always wondered how Santa Claus became associated with Christmas. Like, I've heard stories and, you know, you kind of piece things together, but I really wanted to look into it. I was going to do this as a little bit more of a goof, funny kind of episode, but there's actually a lot of history here. So the very beginning of it, I kind of researched it a little more on the lighter side, so there's a little bit of goofier information, but then it gets into the actual story, and we're going to piece some things together. This very special Christmas episode of the Primitive Intelligence Podcast starts now. Chances are, regardless of where you are, how you were raised, what you believe, you've heard of Santa Claus in some shape or form. But how does this jolly, red-suited fat man with a beard who sneaks down chimneys, how does he fit in with the birth of Jesus? Have you ever wondered this? How do these two things, it's like Easter. Like, how does Easter in a rabbit that lays eggs and carries a basket, how do these things fit together? Well, let's have a look, shall we? First, let's just go over the stats of Santa Claus. And this is the kind of goofy part I was just mentioning. But we'll go over it anyway. Well, reportedly lives at the North Pole, which in and of itself is a pretty good feat because the North Pole's got no real infrastructure up there. So keeping things running, pretty good. So living at the North Pole employs elves and reindeer who may be either magical or are enhanced with some kind of technology. And with the use of this magic or advanced tech, he can travel around the world visiting every residence on the planet in 24 hours. Estimates are that there are 2.3 billion homes on Earth right now, meaning that he'd have to visit over 26,000 homes per second. That's a lot. And then you figure he's got time to eat cookies, drink milk, and also people can hear him laughing as he's going through the sky. He must be moving so fast, you wouldn't be able to hear him. There's something not quite right with that. But also not quite right is that every year, this North Polian flies around the world and illegally enters the homes of billions of people. He's never prosecuted. Not once. Not as far as I know, has never been prosecuted. This may have something to do with the fact that he tends to leave gifts behind, but you would think in today's day and age, with how offended and how triggered people get, you would think that someone would have pressed charges by now, but apparently not. Even more disturbing, Santa is the original big data collector. And what do I mean by that? Well, what's he know? He knows when you're sleeping, knows when you're awake, knows if you've been naughty or nice. He's worse than your phone. And to no one's dismay, no one seems to be bothered by this. Not only does Santa allow it, but actively attracts children to opt in to his data collection efforts. They just send him a letter. Hey, this is what I'm interested in. Give me some advertising. Now, he also has several aliases. Santa Claus, Saint Nick, Kris Kringle, Father Christmas. There's others that we'll talk about. But that's a little shady. How many names do you need? In some stories, Santa or a variation of Santa is male. In some stories, female. And may also have a very disturbing alter ego, at the very least, a very less charming cohort than he is. And we'll talk about that towards the end. So how is this person, this data-collecting burglar, reverse burglar, how is he affiliated with Christmas? So let's look at Christmas for a second. December 25th is a weird date because most scholars who have studied Jesus in the Bible, theologians, they agree that not only was Jesus not born on the 25th, probably not born in December at all, and that the birth of Jesus probably occurred sometime between June and September. Now, this is based off of the fact that some of the other things that are mentioned in the Bible at the time of Jesus, cultural norms at the time. So as humans, we tend to have children throughout the year. There's like no set time, but the normal average time of birth at that point in history usually fell in the summer months. And I won't get into the reasons as why, but you can figure it's cold out and people stay inside more. We'll say no more. And then there's also astrological events that would have occurred during those months that would help explain the appearance of the Star of Bethlehem. So when they're looking at it and trying to figure out what they were seeing and why they were attracted to it, these are things that they use. But what would cause Christianity to change the date of birth of their Savior? That seems pretty important, and you wouldn't want to mess with it. So why did it get moved to December 25th? Well, when did it start? The first Christmas celebrated on December 25th, as far as I can tell, was in the year 336. This date was established by the Roman Emperor Constantine, and he had decided that it would be better, it'd be more impactful if Jesus died on the day of the anniversary of his conception. I don't know why, but that was the thought process. But that would mean they'd have to change the date of Jesus' birth. 9 months puts it into December, December 25th. Now, maybe it had something to do with wanting to make his death and his conception fall on the same day. Maybe it also had a little bit to do with the fact that Christianity was growing and there was a lot of other religions and beliefs that were being converted to Christianity, and a lot of them had celebrations in the winter, right around the end of December, such as probably one of the biggest, the celebration of Yule, the summer solstice of Scandinavian origins. Pagan religion was big at the time. Now, many of the traditions of Yule continue even to this day. You may have heard of a Yule log. You ever wonder where that came from, what a Yule is? Well, Yule was the original celebration. And as people converted to Christianity, and they still wanted to celebrate Yule, they just moved the date to the 25th. So they were celebrating the birth of Jesus, but they were still celebrating Yule. Now, the Yule log may have originally been like a bonfire or a large tree stump that had been cut and then set ablaze that would burn throughout the celebration, throughout this 2-day celebration. And then now it's just kind of a log in the fire. It's the Yule log. You may have heard the term Yuletide greetings. This was the original happy holidays. It was the greeting that you gave people for Yule, Yuletide. Some early practices of Yule may have also included sacrifices or offerings to gods or other mythical beings, such as elves. When you think about where elves fit into Santa Claus and Christmas, it makes more sense when you realize the pagan roots of some of the traditions, such as offerings to elves. Just feasts and drinking, like the eat, drink, and be merry, the whole like Christmas feast, that kind of thing. Well, back in the day, back when Yule was being celebrated, winters were a lot more harsh than we have them now. And like right now, you know, I'm recording this on December 19th. It was like 50 degrees yesterday, and we had torrential downpours, and it's going to be up in the 40s tomorrow. You know, this time of year back then would be, you'd be under feet of snow. So most people lived off the land. You didn't have supermarkets to go to. You lived off the land. So you had your crops, and you would store as many as you could for the winter, and then you may have had some livestock, and you'd keep them for as long as you could in the winter. But at some point, you had to decide how much of your food that you've stored do you feed to your livestock before you just eat your livestock. So feasts, because they had to do something. And in drinking, because, well, a lot of this is, a lot of these traditions were brought down into Europe, south through Europe, by the Germanic people, the early Germans. And Germans like to drink. Also, paradise trees. This is an early form of the Christmas tree. You're going to see that a lot of our modern Christmas has heavily influenced by German roots. So trees in Yule were very symbolic. Either fir trees or oak trees, depending on the kind of variety of pagan Yule that was celebrated. Some stories, I guess it depends on the area and what was available too. But so families in the 700s in Germany who were converting to Christianity but still wanted to follow their pagan beliefs would bring a tree inside, or they would use wood and make like a little pyramid, like a little triangular pyramid that they would decorate, or the tree they would decorate. But they decorate it with either white candles or apples or bread wafers. And they're usually very simple trees. And you still see them today. So if you ever see a family that decorates their tree and they use all white, chances are, if you ask them, their beliefs and their traditions probably go back to German or Dutch heritage, where these were things that they did. Now, the paradise tree was, it grew in popularity throughout Europe and eventually made it to England, and the royal family started putting up paradise trees. But as time went on and, you know, the colonies were found, and there was the American Revolution and the United States of America was born, it was a different time. And there were German settlers who took things like the paradise trees and their beliefs, this Yule-style Christmas with them. But it wasn't until like the late 1820s, early 1830s, that Christmas trees really gained popularity in America. There were some areas in New England, especially pre-Revolutionary War, where Christmas was banned. And it was banned for two reasons. It was either banned because it was celebrated in England, or the Puritans would ban it because it was too pagan. The pagan roots of Christmas, the way it was celebrated, they would ban it. Imagine that. Imagine Christmas being banned today because it was pagan. So that's kind of how Christmas kind of got started. But what does that have to do with Santa Claus? Other than the mention of elves in ancient Yule celebrations, there's really no connection here. So next we're going to look a little more modern. It's not, but it's kind of made a resurgence in recent times. And in Pennsylvania, we've got probably 8 of these, and I know they're all around the country. And you've probably seen them. Even if you haven't gone to one, you've probably seen them or heard about them. These Chris Kindle markets. The German Chris Kindlemarkt, right? So most people call them Chris Kindle markets, or just Christmas markets. These were originally just simple winter markets in Germany because, like I said, the winters were tough. So a day or two out of a month, they would open these large markets. So everybody would get together and kind of either barter or trade or buy food and supplies to help them get through the winter. And these were held long before Christmas was even celebrated. So this goes way, way, way back. I looked at some of the websites for some of these Christkindl markets, and a lot of them say, oh, we're, you know, traditional German Christmas market, and the tradition goes back to like the 1300s or 1400s. And the tradition may go back that far, but not the name. So these winter markets went way, 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 way back before Christmas was celebrated. But the name Christkindl Market, or Christkindlmarkt, didn't come around until the 1500s. And that's because Christkind, or Christkindl, the word, was created by the Reverend Martin Luther, the founder of the Lutheran religion. And we talked about this a little bit back in the episode about my great-great-grandfather. Luther had very specific ideas about how Christianity should be believed, how it should be taught, how it should be followed. And this is why there was Lutheranism spurred from him. That's how it got its name, Martin Luther, Lutheranism, because he had specific ideas. And he was very frustrated with Catholics, because Catholics were beginning to kind of deify saints. They were praying to saints or calling on saints for help. They were saying prayers to saints. They had medallions of saints. And he didn't like the idea that saints were being worshipped. That wasn't the job of a saint. That worship should be saved for Jesus, not for saints. So he wanted to change that. One of the ways he changed that is by eliminating one particular saint. At least for this story, there's probably others, but for this story, one particular saint he removed from the Lutheran religion, and that was Saint Nicholas. Saint Nicholas was a real person. He was either a monk or a bishop, depending on the source that I read. He was described as a monk or a bishop, but he served the Roman Catholic Church at the time of Constantine. Constantine, the one who changed the date of Christmas to suit his agenda, he was alive at the same time. Now, the Saint Nicholas, he was, by all accounts, and there's no pun intended here, but he was a jolly old soul. In his later years, white beard, tended to wear red robes, and was protective of children, and wound up becoming the patron saint of children, and would regularly visit children who were in need or who were deemed worthy, and would give them gifts. Sometimes it would be fruit or snacks. Sometimes it'd be a doll of him. A little weird, but that's what he would do. And back in the day, I guess that was, anything was better than nothing. But Saint Nicholas had his own day, St. Nicholas Day, on his birthday, which is December 6th. So there would be December 5th and December 6th, there'd be a celebration in honor of St. Nicholas, and then people would give gifts to children. Well, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? But this made people really... St. Nicholas became very popular, and Martin Luther was not thrilled about this, so he's like, you know what? We're doing away with St. Nicholas. And he created a new character. He created a new person, an entity to take the place of St. Nicholas. And the name of this entity was Christkindl. Now, when you hear Christkindlmarkt or Christkindl Market, you might think Christkindl means Christmas, and it doesn't. It actually means Christ child. Now, Christkindl was a blonde woman who had wings, very angelic, and she would go around at night and she would take gifts to children. But to further distance these things from St. Nicholas, Martin Luther changed the date, much like Constantine changed the date of Christmas. Martin Luther changed the date of this gift giving to children, and he moved it to December 24th, Christmas Eve. So now we've got like the first connection here. We've got Christmas, which was just the celebration of the birth of Christ. And now we've got the Lutheran Church taking this newly created entity of Christkindl, who is the angel who takes gifts to children, and moves that day to Christmas Eve. So the two kind of get put together. Now, over the years, the name Christkindl starts to change, starts to be pronounced a little bit differently. And the word morphs into the name Kris Kringle. Now, Kris Kringle becomes the new gift bearer. And contrary to what Martin Luther wanted, people still remember the connection between Christkindl and St. Nicholas. So Kris Kringle begins to take on the attributes of St. Nicholas, the white beard, being jolly, being kind to children. And then in other regions where Lutheran wasn't followed, in the mostly Dutch-speaking regions, St. Nicholas was still beloved, and people still celebrate St. Nicholas Day. But there was a difference. So St. Nicholas in Dutch was written differently, pronounced slightly differently. So it was Sint Nicolaas, S-I-N-T-N-C-O-L-A-A-S, Sint Nicholas. And that, much like how Kris Kringle came about, that kind of morphed, and some reports say it was due to some Dutch slang, but Sint Nicholas turned into Sinterklaas. And even today, Sinterklaas parties are held on December 5th, on St. Nicholas Eve. St. Nicholas Eve also has another name, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, and it's an interesting connection to something else. But so St. Nicholas Eve, Sinterklaas, these parties are held, where there's usually feasting and drinking, and maybe some gift giving, games, things like that. Just a kind of a holiday tradition. But how do we get from Sinterklaas and St. Nicholas and Kris Kringle, how do we make the jump to Santa Claus? Now, there's some obvious similarities in like Sinterklaas and Santa Claus, but how did that come about? We're talking about an actual saint, a real person who lived back in the 300s. Like, how do we make this jump? So we got to move forward a little bit. So Yule and Christmas have morphed together. The world's changing, right? The 13 colonies are established. The Revolutionary War breaks out. America becomes independent. We move into the 1800s. And there's, in 1823, there's a poem published by Clement Clark Moore. And the poem is A Visit from St. Nicholas, or as it's better known, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Now, this was a poem that he wrote reportedly just for his children, and I'm not sure how it got published, but it's widely believed to be the first depiction of Santa Claus, like a verbal depiction of Santa Claus. The name Santa Claus is not used anywhere in the poem. It's also interesting that Santa Claus is depicted as a diminutive being with 8 tiny reindeer. So not a full-sized human, but more of an elf himself. And it also depicts St. Nicholas coming into the homes through the chimney, but only leaving gifts in stockings. And stockings were either stockings or shoes in the German and Dutch celebrations of Christmas or Yule, where gifts or rewards, fruit or small toys were left in either shoes or in the stockings. But nowhere in the poem is it mentioned that gifts are left under a tree. And remember, this is 1823, and the Christmas tree, or the paradise tree from the Germans, didn't really get popular until the late 20s and early 1830s. So it fits in. There was no, imagine a Christmas with no Christmas tree. And in the early 1800s, that's what we had. And that is, like I said, the first believed depiction. And in a lot of articles, this is who gets credited with the first depiction of Santa Claus, but it's actually not. In 1821, 2 years earlier than 'Twas a Night for Christmas, there's another poem that was published in New York by an anonymous author. No one knows who it was. And the title of it was Old Santa Claus with Much Joy. There was illustrations that came along with it. And they show him maybe full-size human. It's really hard to tell the way it's drawn. But only with one reindeer and a small, like low brown hat. Almost looks like a fur hat. And either a red or a green jacket. And maybe brown hair. It didn't really look like white hair, but it was a weird illustration, so maybe that's wrong. But interesting is that Santa Claus is spelled S-A-N-T-E-C-L-A-U-S as one word, Santa Claus. This is the first written instance of Santa Claus. Even though it's written differently, it's actually the first one that I could find. And similarities are is bringing gifts to good children, has a little sleigh, has reindeer, it's jolly. Bring, you know, toys, all that fun stuff. But Santa Claus also brings, for the bad children, well, it doesn't actually bring them anything, but brings a rod they leaves in the home with instructions for the parents to beat the child if they continue to misbehave. That is very German. Now, both these depictions, though, are similar to modern Santa, but they're not exact. Even the name, right? So Saint Nicholas, that's obviously from St. Nicholas or Sinterklaas. And then Santa Claus, in this weird one-word spelling with an E, it would be very similar to what you would expect the Americanized Dutch version of Sinterklaas to be, Santa Claus. So I would imagine both these stories have their roots in the German and Dutch folklore, in the belief in Yule and the celebration of Yule, in St. Nicholas or Christkindl. There's no mention of if Moore used this earlier poem as inspiration. And there was a couple of things I read. People like, well, he kind of stole the work or whatever. But if they both were of Dutch or German or Dutch and German ancestry, these stories would have been in their general knowledge anyway. So the fact that two people came up with similar stories a few years apart really isn't that surprising. So I don't think one was a ripoff of the other. I just think it was similar stories of related topics, and that's how they came out. We got to move a little further into the future. Not far. We go a few years ahead to 1863 to get our first modern depiction, or close to modern depiction of Santa Claus. And this is when Thomas Nast, he was a cartoonist, and he did a series of drawings for Harper's Weekly, which was a magazine. And he did depictions of Santa Claus, and he is credited with being the one to invent Santa Claus. And a lot of times they point back to this Night Before Christmas poem saying that, well, that was Saint Nick, and he based Santa Claus off of Saint Nick. But like I said, 2 years before that, there was Santa Claus in this anonymous author. So yeah, he was the first with the depiction of Saint Nicholas from the poem with the name Santa Claus. And some of his drawings showed Santa Claus wearing what looked like a very Americana style outfit with maybe, it was in black and white. So I'm just going to assume it was supposed to be a blue jacket with white stars on it and then red and white striped pants. Very similar to Uncle Sam. But then he had others that were more what we'd expect. The red suit, the white beard. The hat was a little bit different. He had like a holly on his head, but he was carrying like a sack with toys in it. He had toys under his arm. And NASA also said that he used the descriptions that were given in The Night Before Christmas as a template for his drawings. But still not exactly our modern Santa Claus. For that, we go forward to 1931. Almost, 70 years later. So 70 years later, 1931, artist Haddon Sundblom paints Santa Claus. And what we would traditionally consider the modern Santa Claus, the rosy cheeks, the white beard. He wasn't wearing a hat, but he was very jolly and rotund. And this painting was done for none other than Coca-Cola as an ad. So you can probably picture this ad in your head of Santa Claus holding a bottle of Coca-Cola in his hand and like a smile on his face. That's the first modern depiction of Santa Claus in 1931. So just an interesting turn that it went from the saint to an ad. But what about the bad children? In all these depictions, whether it's Santa Claus or St. Nick, Kris Kringle, Kris Kindle, St. Nicholas, Sinterklaas, there's always some kind of negative for the bad children, and that's just German, right? German folklore is always, if you do the right thing, you get this gift. If you do the wrong thing, this really bad thing is going to happen to you. And that's no different when it comes to Santa Claus. But the Santa Claus, the counterpart to Santa Claus, and this is either, in some stories, it's an alter ego. They are one and the same. In some stories, they're separate entities. But what we're talking about here is Krampus. Sometimes known as Grumpus, but more popularly known as Krampus. Now, I know there's a movie franchise recent that's based on Krampus, but I haven't watched it, and I really don't want to because I'm sure it's just an overly Hollywoodized depiction, you know, very horror film. Look, the original Krampus, the German folklore Krampus, is scary enough. So, stories of Krampus arose in the 1100s and very closely tied to St. Nicholas. Not Sinterklaas, not Santa Claus, but St. Nicholas. So stories that on St. Nicholas Eve, on St. Nicholas Day Eve, it was known as the Krampusnacht, the Krampus Night. And on this night, the Krampus would go into towns and would carry, I'll give you a depiction of the Krampus. Kind of hairy, kind of ugly, got horns, long tongue, fangs, and carries chains, sticks, and bells. And will use these chains and sticks and bells to kind of scare up all the bad children. And then when they start running, well, he's got a basket on his back, and he catches the bad children, and then he takes them to the underworld with him. So I think you'd rather get hit by a stick than taken to basically hell with the Krampus. And there's an interesting connection here because you got St. Nicholas, who is this religious icon, and then you've got Krampus, who is the opposite, right? Not Satan, but a Krampus. Right, so that's another very German kind of a twist to a story. Like, oh, you could get like some fruit, you know, or a toy, or you're gonna get thrown in a basket and taken by this hideous beast to the underworld. It's kind of dark, but that's German folklore for you. But that's not the only weird story. This one is a little less known. I heard of it when I was younger. And it wasn't real prominent, but I knew it. And then when I was living in Florida, I heard an elderly German woman tell this to my friend's child, and the look of shock and dismay on both their faces was priceless. But this was She told the story as Santa Claus, but it was the Kris Kringle version, the Kris Kindle. And this comes, I think, partly from the idea that Kris Kindle was angelic, so not really of Earth, and that Kris Kringle wasn't of Earth, was from somewhere else, or sometimes just flat out from Mars. And would battle the Krampus for the souls of children. So, like, not only was Krampus taking the children to the underworld, but was stealing their souls, Krampus is sometimes also depicted as a devil or Satan in these stories. So when Kris Kringle would rescue these children, well, their souls, well, they couldn't return home. So they would go back with him, effectively becoming Santa's elves to guide where he goes and help direct him to children who are in need or make the gifts. Really crazy. Now, when this lady, my neighbor down in Florida, when she told my friends this, my friend and his son, we're walking over to the beach, and it was around Christmas, and she came out and told the story. And to me, it was just like, okay, I'm German. I'm used to, I'm not from Germany, but I've got German ancestry. And so I'm used to hearing stories like this. They were not. And it worked because my friend's son was terrified. He's like, I've got to behave. I am not going on a spaceship with Krampus, or getting dragged to the underworld to Krampus, and maybe Santa Claus will come save me. I'm not banking on that. It's just, she tells a story of Santa coming in on a spaceship. That's not a sleigh. It's a spaceship. And, you know, you got to be good because he's not here all the time. And if the Krampus gets you, he might not find you. And man, it would terrify that kid. But it's interesting how either with Kris Kringle, Kris Kindle, and Krampus, or if it's St. Nicholas and Krampus, they're both kind of more religious icons on one side, and then this really kind of demonic on the other. I mean, what's the short of it? Like, how do we... It's a long way around to get from all these people, all these names, to how Santa Claus gets involved in Christmas. So basically, we've got a monk or a bishop from the time of Constantine, who, by the way, changed the date of the birth of Jesus to suit his agenda. This monk becomes St. Nicholas, the patron saint of children, but is too popular for Martin Luther, who erases him from the Lutheran religion and replaces him with a fictitious Kris Kindle, a blonde female angel who takes over his gift-giving routine and moves it from the saint's birthday on December 5th and December 6th to December 24th, only to later be later known as Kris Kringle, who then just takes on the attributes of St. Nicholas anyway. Meanwhile, the Dutch, still following St. Nicholas, begin calling him Sinterklaas. Take those stories to the New World, where poems were written about him, start calling him Santa Claus, sometimes St. Nick or Kris Kringle, and then a couple artists do some drawings, and one of them gets sold for an ad. Merry Christmas. That's how Santa got involved with Christmas. That's how he stole it, because now you still have people who follow the religious side of Christmas, but by and large, Christmas is a commercial holiday, and it's to buy, and Santa Claus is used for that. So maybe the Santa Claus we know is actually the Krampus. And that's the story of how Santa Claus stole Christmas to sell things, to sell you Coca-Cola. Not really. I hope you guys enjoy this. There's a lot of information there. I'll put links to all these in the show notes, so if you want to go look at any of this yourself, there are stories and things that I came across that I just left out because I couldn't verify any of it. One was about Dutch sailors who brought the belief of Santa Claus with them to New Amsterdam when it came to the New World, and then they used Santa Claus as an anti-Christmas icon during the Revolutionary War to battle the British belief in Christmas. I couldn't verify any of that. I could find no mentions of it anywhere. That came from a story that just seems like somebody wrote, and then it just got mass spammed to multiple websites, and it just keeps on coming up. But there's no actual information on there. But I'm sure there's other stories that I've missed, other variations of it that I missed, and maybe some fairly important facts. But this is just a quick look at Santa Claus on the podcast that usually talks about much crazier stuff. Yeah, because when you come right down to it, Santa Claus or Saint Nicholas or Sinterklaas or Christkindl or whatever it is, it comes from a lot of sources. It comes from a lot of beliefs. And even within in towns, different families had different versions of these stories. So there's a lot of different versions of these. But I hope you enjoyed it. These kind of stories are always fun. And I hope you guys enjoy your Yule or your Christmas or your St. Nicholas Day or your Krampusnacht or your Christkindlmacht or whatever it is that you celebrate. Celebrate all of them. Merry Christmas. And I got one more episode for you this season. That will come up next week. But until then, enjoy your Christmas. Hope you get everything that you want. Hope you get to visit your friends and family, and you have a great time. Be nice, be kind, be well. That's going to do it for me this week. See ya.